welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at the set review episode for Fate Reforged. We know y'all have been looking forward to this. I'm Marcel MTG on Twitter, and I'm here with my co-host Ryan.
Yo, what's up? Yeah, I'm stoked for this set. It's gonna make some standard things happen.
We also got the resident salt on a stick, Jason Ealt.
On a stick? What does that even mean? Hey everybody, my Twitter handle is at Jason Ealt because Marcel decided we're doing Twitter handles.
And then we also brought back someone. We haven't had many repeat guests, but this is a friend of the cast way back from episode 24. So he was here for the Ravnica set review that we did. We listened to the episode and Ryan had the worst mic ever, but it was a decent episode. So we brought back Conley Woods. Conley, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How's everyone else doing?
Doing quite well.
All right. I'm here for some set review action.
You ready for this? After you finally playing some Magic, you got to do some GP Denver and Omaha. But
I didn't get to play in Denver because I got sick, but I was there for it. I was surrounded by GP Denver.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. But I did play in Omaha. It was good times.
You had an exciting deck for Omaha or something. Is there something you want to talk about?
We don't have to go deep into it. It was just a Martyr of Sands kind of hate bear deck, blue-white. I thought it was pretty well positioned against Delver and Burn and Pod, various combo decks, even to a lesser extent, Affinity and things of that nature. But then, I got paired up against decks that were none of those decks and were like red, white, nor in the wary, Purvo, Smarter, Sands and stuff like that, that I was not able to defeat. So, I did not walk away with any day two claim. But the archetype seemed pretty solid when it was working. It worked really, really well. And in any of the games where I kind of got the draws I would expect, I was pretty happy with it. Should have an article up on TCG Player by the time this goes up if anyone wants to check out that deck. And I should be working on more Martyr-style lists for Channel Fireball in the near future.
Cool. What about MTG Potpourri? When's another episode going to come out?
Heck if I know. We were supposed to do one like last Thursday or Wednesday or something, and unfortunately Tom had a family member pass away. So his wife had to pick up and leave shop, and as did he, so we had to push things back, and we're kind of waiting for those things to settle before we get him back on the train. But you know, real life happens. We'll get one out as soon as we can.
Well, tell Tom I kept the this is a very special episode. It's something that when he stepped away, I had to make sure the kid continue that on, and I'm glad that he's back and he's using it as well.
It's fair. I noticed.
So let's jump into the set review. We're going to jump right in. We're going to go down the list. We're going to look at all the rares and mythics. Again, with our set review, we're still trying to figure it out. So we're just going to discuss this. We're not going to do no letter grades. We're just going to talk about the cards, and we'll skip over bulk, basically. And we'll just go down the line. But we're going to start out with Alicia, who smiles at death. This is the rare Mardu legendary creature, the warrior. So what do you guys think about this card?
This will never truly be bulk because it's the first Mardu Tiny Leader General. I don't know how much that format is going to move the needle, if
what
at
is
all.
This? Hold on, what Tiny Leaders? I've heard.
Tiny Leaders is like, it's basically Legacy with EDH rules. You play with a 50-card deck and everything has to be 3 converted mana or less. Now, this is the first legendary creature that counts for Mardu colors, so it's like the only Mardu general. So if you wanted to play red, black, white, good stuff, or some sort of Warriors deck, I guess, this is your general. So I don't think the fact that it's applicable in a format that, albeit we don't really know how much that moves the needle, I don't think this will ever be truly bulk. But as far as like standard playability, I could be wrong, but this reminds me a lot of Exiva, a card that we really liked that never really did anything.
So as far as EDH, if the general has off-color symbols in their text box.
Yeah, it's called the Memnarch rule. Basically, Memnarch is not colorless in EDH. It's blue because it has blue in its activation. Any mana symbols in the text box count for its color identity. So despite Alicia being mono-red, it's got a black-white activation, making it a 3-color general.
I just learned something new about EDH. Still don't want to play it. So, at $3, that's where it's at. I mean, is it going to come down? Is it going to see play in standard?
I think this will very likely see play in Standard before it rotates. The effect is extremely abusable. It is not 2 converted mana cost or less. It is 2 power or less, which is Revelark. So you can return your Hornet Queen with this. You know, there's a lot of powerful things you could potentially do. And a 3-mana 3/2 first strike is not exactly bad on its own. That's like something that constructed, it would potentially get by with any number of extra abilities on there just because it's really hard to block a 3-power first strike creature. However, it is only rare, and it's a legendary, so you're gonna play a couple of them at most. So it's not like it's gonna be a high dollar card, but I think it'll still see a decent amount of fringe play.
Do you see this with being played with 8-3-0s or in a Warriors deck or something?
Potentially. I don't know.
Or Whip?
Yeah, definitely with Whip. It's the same style of card. It
interacts with Ravelmaster as well, and both those are Warriors. So, like, not sure that Ravelmaster is the best thing in return since you're not getting the best part of Ravelmaster at that point.
Well, you even have a lot of fringe, like, awkward cards that people haven't really played, like the Ankle Shankler or whatever. Like, that guy is like a card you would never really cast him, but if you put him into play for free, and he made your entire team unblockable effectively. Like, that's a potentially desired effect. So there's things you could do with this that people are going to have to kind of go through the gatherer and figure out what has two or less power and figure and what they could do with that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned cards like Revelark. This is going to be pretty spicy and non-tiny leader EDH as well. So this is fun. Let's
pick up foils.
Yeah, if you can get foils around 5, that couldn't hurt.
So next card is Arcbound. This is a bulk rare.
Arcbound. Don't get it confused with Arcbound, people.
Oops.
Yeah,
man, don't get it twisted.
I still don't know how I feel about this card. Like, I feel like it's bulk, but, yeah.
I don't know, it's a powerful effect. Like, this is Earthquake, yeah, if you could figure out how to do it correctly. And it's only 3 mana, which is, you know, like, even if you just use this in combat when they're blocking your thing, like Goyf on Goyf action, Arc Bond, everything dies. Like, there's something potentially there. I don't know. It's a very unique card. So, like, if it sees play, it's going to see play in a kind of something that we haven't seen before.
It definitely gives you reach when they're blocking, you know. But, I don't know.
Oh, I guess you save your Goyf in that situation, too, because it's each other creature. Well, so, but if
you use it as a stuffy doll, and you could have all kind of madness.
I mean, sure, that's cute.
I still see it as bulk. It just requires a lot of setup. I mean, I don't see it being played in Standard, but there's potential, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason it's bulk is because it's not going to be a 4-of.
It seems like an EDH card that doesn't excite me as an EDH player. But I could definitely see it doing some deflecting palm type stuff in Standard, but I'm still not going to call this above bulk.
Yeah, I agree. Archfiend of Depravity. Should I be reading this one, or do we think this is just bulk?
This is ridiculous in EDH.
Okay.
But, like, okay, so, like, the problem is it's a demon, so everyone, like, all the people that are playing Kali are like, oh my god, a good demon, but everyone else is kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I want this effect. Basically, at the beginning of each opponent's end step, they choose up to 2 creatures and sack the rest. So you're probably going to get each player once and piss them off a lot. But it's a 5/4 for 5 demon. It's a little fringy. I don't know that every deck wants it, but I think it's a powerful effect. But I don't know that amount of play is going to make this above bulk. But maybe if you can get cheap foils of this, that would be a play.
Yeah, I don't see this being played much in Standard. I mean, 2 creatures on the board in this format, anything besides tokens. Like, even then, Jeskai tokens, like, if you're really, all they could do is, you know, at the end step, and then they could do everything they want with their tokens, with their 2 tokens, and use it for that one turn to kill you. So.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if this sees a little bit of sideboard play. Like, it does have some reach against tokens. It's a 5/4, so a token's probably not going to be able to get it big enough to take it out. So it's effectively shrinking their board down to one relevant thing. And also against, like, decks like Mono Green that just kind of play a bunch of mana dorks. Like, if you play this, like, if they don't effectively have Arbor Colossus right away, they have to do something. I mean, I'm talking about, like, a 2-of in some sideboard, so it's not, like, an impressive card by any means, but I could see it doing a little bit of something.
Yeah, that would be really nasty against Vano Green. Just like, oh yeah, wipe the board.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get like a threat or two out of it, but you're playing black, so theoretically you're just going to Hero's Downfall, whatever's left over or whatever.
All right. So next card is our first Legendary Dragon. This is how you say this?
Jason? Atarka.
Atarka.
Atarka. This is very exciting for casuals. I kind of wish this were Mythic, because this would be like a dollar Mythic for like a year or two, and then it would be randomly $6, and everybody would be like, what is this $6? At Rare, I don't really know what the ceiling is. I mean, I'm going to sound like a broken record on all these EDH playable, non-standard playable bulk rares that are $1 right now. But like, get foils. Like, yeah, of course. Get foils of dragons that are ridiculous. This card's ridiculous. I don't know what the ceiling is in a year or two. So, I wouldn't pick these up for cash, because it probably has room to go down from a dollar before it rebounds. So, let's just wait. But this card is, it's silly in EDH. Like, if you have this in a Newt Bar or Hellkite, you can probably kill just about anybody.
All right, yeah. I don't know about standard. It's 7.
It's awful on standard.
Unless there's a dragon deck that has a bunch of dragons that come in for 3.
No. The only applicable place for this is in dragon storm decks, if those ever pop up again, whether it's modern or legacy, because putting this into play effectively doubles the power of your dragons. So you can put this into play with a Hellkite Overlord, and that right there is, that's a dragon storm for 2. That's lethal. Mm. So. Or not Hellcat Overlord, whatever the Jund guy is, the 7-7. Nobody knows Karthus. Karthus, that's his name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Karthus has haste, right?
And he gives your other dragons haste.
Sure does.
Fair.
Interesting. Alright. So next card is a card that I'm actually excited about. This overpriced is Brutal Horde Chief. This is 3 and a black for an Orc Warrior. 3/3, legendary creature. He is the Black Hell Rider. Gain life for each, every time a creature you have that attacks. But it's at $10, so that seems a little...
That's Hell Rider tax. I wonder how much play Hell Rider would have gotten if it didn't have haste.
Okay, so it doesn't have haste, but there's one thing to note about this card. It does not have to attack to gain the ability.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, Hell Rider had to attack.
No.
Plus it has a built-in Master Warcraft, which we talked about being relevant.
Yeah.
Is that a standard? I think that ability probably wins the game, right, Conley?
Yeah, if you're able to actually, well, first of all, you don't even have to play this guy in red or white decks, which is, like, he's strong enough on his own, it's just like a thing in a token deck. Like, you could easily just play him like mono black tokens or mono black aggro if that were a thing, because he has an immediate effect similar to Hellrider. Like, I can play this in my board of 3 guys and attack and get value out of him right away. Now, that alone, might not be strong enough within the context of standard, in which case that the second ability would need to make some difference. But if mid-range is all over the place and people are playing Siege Rhinos and stuff, like that ability is very, very relevant. Like, you might not win the game, but you're going to generate a +2 or +3 card advantage swing off it in a lot of different matchups right now. So, I would say he's worse than Hellrider overall just because of his natural color. Being red is so much better than being black in this instance, but he's still a very strong card.
How do you like him at $10? Would you like him
better? Well, the thing is, he's Mythic, and Mythics do so many wonky things these days. Like, they either sit at, like, nothing, or they are $5 for forever, then $20 for, like, 2 months, and then back down to $5. Or there's the, like, $40 for no reason Mythic. This guy's, like, relevant, and he'll see a little bit of play. I would say, like, 1 to 2 decks that are popular, he might see some play in them. But he's not even a guaranteed 4 of, I wouldn't say. Just because other cards like Sorin do a very similar job, as him at the same mana cost. And it, like I said, his second ability probably is going to end up needing to be relevant, which means you have to play him in at least a red-black or red-white deck, or a black-white deck. So, I don't know, he will probably be around like $8 or something like that in the long term, but it's not a card I would ever want to invest in, just because I feel like if he's making moves, they're going to be very small.
I think him being a 3/3 is going to be a downside to him, kind of like Sidisi.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sidisi at least has, like, you know, immediate, doesn't have to do anything else to get an effect. Like, you can bolter right away and you're still getting a 2/2 or whatever, or you're still milling yourself, getting some value. Like, this could just be killed instantly. It doesn't just automatically give you value.
So the next card we got is the Siege. It's the Citadel Siege. It's the White Siege. It's $1 right now. So they're saying that people are excited about this. Is this because of seeing some EDH play, Jason? Is that what you...
This is one of the lesser exciting ones in EDH. Both those effects are pretty negligible in that format. Like, I'm not super, I'm excited about a lot of sieges, and this is not among them.
Yeah, this card's poop.
Alright. That's what I was thinking. Alright, bulk. So we got Crucible, next one, Crucible of the Spirit Dragon. This is the land here that you can, storage up counters and then spend it for dragons.
I'm baffled at how bad this card is, because this could have been 3 times as good as it is and still been a bad card.
I'm going to disagree there. If you made 3x the mana when you removed x storage counters, this card would be busted. But anyway, regardless of that point, like, the card is still a storage land. Storage lands are powerful. They've seen play as old as Legacy. I think a couple of vintage decks have run them just because they give you the opportunity to do something that not many things do, which is you're trading time for mana. This, while it is not a very good card, probably won't see any standard play. I wouldn't expect it to be a big constructive player. Like, isn't something casual people love dragons, and doesn't this just make a ton of multicolored mana for your dragons? So, like, aren't people going to play this for forever in casual decks?
Well, the problem is, and hello, by the way, everybody, I'm now here.
Oh, wait, who's this guy?
This is the guy who just got home and jumped on as soon as possible. Hey, everybody. Hi, Conley. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, what is your name? We don't know who you are.
I am Corbin Hostler. I am a member of this podcast who is usually on time. I'm sorry I was late tonight.
This is our other esteemed guest right here, Corbin Hostler. Thank you for coming to the podcast.
Ooh, demoted. Thank you. I rushed home from work to be here. Back to to jump in here. The Crucible, the thing is, the same casual players who like to play with dragons are the same ones who hate to open a rare land in their packs. So, you know, I don't know how much traction it will get amongst that crowd.
I don't feel like casual players hate every land. I feel like they just don't like something as simple as like a dual land or a fetch land.
Like, well, yeah.
This still says dragons on it.
It's true. I mean, you gotta put it in the same category as the Sliver Hive, which was opened less than this and is basically a dollar, which is where this is pre-sailing. So
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. This is worse than Hollow Trees. And Hollow Trees doesn't say it must be spent on dragons. This is poop. It's worse than an uncommon from Fallen Empires. Can we move on?
All right, let's move on to another card I'm excited about. This is the Crux of Fate. This is the Black Wrath. And it's going for $2 right now. I think that's a little cheap, given how blue-black control has been doing and how this will slot in there. I don't know. $2 seems should be like a $3-$4 card.
I thought that $2.50 was a cheap presale on End Hostilities. A 5-mana Wrath does not necessarily mean that it is going to be worth a ton of money. Like, I think that we have to reapproach the way that we look at these kind of cards. I think $2 is where most of our Wraths are going to end up.
Supreme Verdict, which is basically the best Wrath you can have, was only, I think, $3 to $4 when it was in standard, and that will probably, I mean, I believe that that saw more play than this will. So, I mean, $2-$3 is about where it is. I certainly don't see a lot of upside at $2.
So where's Perilous Vault in paper right now?
It's expensive.
But that's because it's mythic and
it's set. A mythic, exactly.
It's a mythic in a set that no one's redeeming on Moto.
It's $8 right now.
And so. I've talked to a number of people too who are already playing blue black control. And there's a number of them who are, like, not taking their Perilous Vaults out for this card. I mean, blue-black doesn't – like, Perilous Vault does a lot more than just remove creatures.
Have to be able to handle the Planeswalkers.
Yeah, like, that deck already kind of stumbles against those. And, like, because you don't have the same kind of late game that you see with Sphinx's Rev, like, you need cards like Perilous Vault for that reset.
Most people I'm talking to are
looking at this for, like, as, like, a two of.
Yeah, I think the correct split is probably something like two of these and three Perilous Vaults or something after.
Yeah, Rage. Yeah, yeah.
And you run a third of these in the sideboard or whatever against mono green.
Yeah, yeah. Any decks that like heavy creature.
Alright. So the $2 price is probably a little high for it then.
No, it's probably about
It's right about where it's gonna be.
Okay. So next card is Dotar of Adamant.
Dagatar. Daffatar? Okay. We can Dartar. Move on, right?
Yeah, he's bulk.
The only thing he's got going for him is it says from target creature onto a second target creature. It doesn't say from a creature you control, so you can steal their counters. That said, no. The only colors that would want that effect in EDH have blue in them, and he does not, so, I don't know, like Gave decks or something like that. I just, I don't know.
We're talking
The best thing it has going for it is getting Marcel to pronounce the name.
Okay, yeah. There we go. I agree with that. Next.
I thought I'd be a little bit charitable.
Alright, Dragon Scale General, we could probably just say Dragon Scale Bulk.
Yep.
And he's not gonna see much of anything.
I mean, that, Bolster is a super powerful effect that kinda gets ignored for the most part because it doesn't look super fancy. But like, I don't know, I could see like this being like a birthing pod type of a card, like you tutor it up and then reset your Kitchen Finks, and stuff like that after the tap within a turn. Like, there are some, like, weird applications where plus one, plus one counters, and, like, this thing does make things get very big very quickly. Like, 50 cents is, like, probably where it should be, because it's not, like, a super fancy card, but I would not be surprised if this did a little beaten down in standard. Definitely in block.
Interesting.
Like, that effect is significantly stronger than you think. Like, you play this, it doesn't ever have to attack, and it can give something, like, plus three, or plus four immediately. Like, that's already a giant enchantment worth of value, and you still have your 2/3 sitting around.
Yeah. Is block something that, Conley, you think that a lot of, is going to, you know, be a thing, or it's basically an online-only format for the foreseeable future, right?
That is true, but I think that eventually they're gonna have to reincorporate block into PTQ style events, just because we're doing the pre-PTQ system, right, and whatnot. We have a lot more seasons to go through. We have a lot more Magic being played. And I think that the two formats, or three if you count limited, that are being, kind of juggled right now are not going to be quite enough to sustain people. So I would not be surprised to see block within the next 6 months or something being looked at very seriously as a re-enter into the competitive realm. They might not do it for a year or whatever, but I'm pretty sure they'll be talking about it, because block is a thing. It does show off of new cards. It does a lot of things they want them to do. It's just not very liked. So they need to figure out a way to get it more liked, and then it would be a valuable entity.
Maybe with a new standard rotation, that might create more loyalty to the block.
That could be a big thing, because then block would be a bigger indicator of what's going to happen in standard.
So if bolster does end up being pretty good, it would probably be good on a creature where you don't have to do anything to get a bolster trigger. Kind of unlike the next card, which is selling for 3 times what Dragonscale General is selling for, and I don't even really like it at $1.50. We're talking about Dromoka.
I mean, this is at least a 5/5 for 5, so like, even if you're not getting value out of its ability, it's still like a reasonable creature. I mean, the angel that couldn't be sacrificed, or what, Sigarda?
Sigarda.
No. Yeah, Sigarda. She was the nut. Obviously she had Hexproof, which is a significant upgrade to anything going on here, but I could see why people would at least think this is more valuable. In the end, this is gonna see basically zero play, but.
But Dargins. Out of the cycle he's in, I think I like him the second least.
He's a pretty sweet little EDH general.
I mean, the one thing that these dragons, the Cyclops going for it, is that they also have, you know, we're talking about the last card, the Dragon Scale having this, it doesn't have to do anything. This card, it gives it to all your dragons. So as soon as you play this, if you have a dragon that you've played before that in attack, you get the effect the turn you play them.
Correct.
Yeah, Bolster 2 is significant enough.
Yeah, so turning a Scion of the Ur-Dragon into this and then swinging with a pile of dragons is going to be pretty significant.
But
yeah,
obviously.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the most awkward parts about this is that it's a green-white dragon, which are probably the two least dragon-represented colors. So yeah. if you have this as your general EDH, you actually probably don't have a lot of dragons to go with it. So it's actually probably a card you have to include in your dragon deck when you're running Scion of the Ur-Dragon as your general or whatever. And you can't really run him as your general ever, which is kind of lame, but.
I mean, you're not super sad about turning a Scion to this for a turn.
They did a better job, I think, in this set, making, you know, the dragons not all be 7 or 8 mana, but 5 mana is still a bunch when they're all 5 mana or more.
I actually like some of the dragons at Uncommon a little better than this guy, but.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
So we got a Flame Bulk Rider. Next card is,
Whoa. This card does something sweet. You can't just discount it. So for 4 mana, you get a 3/3 and a Splinter Twin for the turn that you're going to be able to do next turn. Now, I'm not saying like Splinter Twin or Momentary Blink, whichever one you want to look at it. Like, that is a potentially highly abusable effect. So I'm at least excited by the card. It is probably going to be very cheap, because if you're running it, it's like a 2 or a 3 of, or it's, you know, the top of your curve or something like that. But this card does some like really neat things, at least, that, we've seen on other crappy designs recently. And I think this one does it in a fancier, more abusable way. So it's something that I would at least, like to see where it goes.
More abusable or less abusable? I think this has a real liability in that you can't copy a good utility creature. It has to be something that's attacking.
Yeah, so but you just turn whatever the heck has utility sideways, and then you kill all the blockers, and then you do your thing.
I'd like to make a bunch of Snapcasters, though, that's...
Snapcast? No, I would. This is not a modern card, but I would never...
I don't play modern. I don't know.
In standard, I think that it could do some cool things. Like I said, I can't argue for the price point, because it's probably not worth anything ever, but it's at least a sweet design. Yeah.
So here's, we do have a price point to argue about.
This is, oh, this next card is the nut.
Oh, okay. Flame, yeah, Wake, I Phoenix. I like the card. I'm wondering about the Ferocious, how often the Ferocious is going to be activated.
This card is not only very good, it is very important to an archetype that is going to get a resurgence with the new set, and that is Mono Red Devotion. It gets two very important things. It gets this card, which is a double red 3-drop that beats down, works well with Ashcloud Phoenix, works well with Sarkhan, works well with, the dragon, Stormbreath Dragon, works well with an active Purphoros, works well with Fanatic Emogis. All those things have 4 power and are played in the deck. In addition to that, the deck also gets the red 3-1, which I think is quite a valuable card because they just want any, like, they played the first strike haste card, you know, Ash sell it, just because it was a strong red drop. And the 3-1, while it's not going to be able to attack quite as often, I think it does the exact same thing and provides an important, 2-mana play that is red, in addition to Eidolon. So now you have two different 2-drops that have red in their casting cost, and 2 different 3-drops if you look at Prophetic Flamespeaker. And all those cards are very, very aggressive, backed up with Fanatic Emogis, potentially Dictate of the Twin Gods, Sarkhan, Stormbreath Dragon. You have like a super aggressive little resilient, because of double Phoenix's, mono-red devotion aggro list. I think it's gonna be pretty good.
Nice. I think we all liked this card last week. We weren't sure how reliably you were going to trigger the Ferocious, but it sounds like, at least in that scenario, it sounds almost, academic.
It's very well made for that scenario. People are going to play this in their, like, Savage Knuckleblade decks and things of that nature, too. But I think it would be mostly played in, like, aggressive red decks that can run something like a Fanatic Emogis or an Ashcloud Phoenix. It might be a dollar or two high on here just because it's not going to be as widely played as something like Chandra's Phoenix, which is saying something because Chandra's Phoenix is not the most widely played card, but it will have the impact that Chandra's Phoenix has for very specific decks.
So you still think there's downside at its current price then?
I would not expect this card to go up in price at all. It would probably drop out.
Like a $3 card.
So it sounds like this is actually interesting because the comparison is obviously, you know, Chandra's Phoenix, but it sounds like this maybe goes in a deck that's a little different than, you know, your super red aggressive burn, you know, your red deck wins type deck where Chandra's Phoenix went.
Yeah,
wants to have 5-drops.
Yeah, because you're not going to be triggering the Ferocious otherwise. I think you want this to provide a ton of pressure and you want to be able to at least threaten lethal damage when you have this kind of card in your deck, but you don't need to do it as quickly as possible. Like, Chandra's Phoenix is backed up by burn spells, so playing burn spells with it means you have an aggressive deck. This is backed up by 4-drops and 3-drops, so it's still going to do a very similar thing to Chandra's Phoenix role, which is soften up your opponent, but you're not necessarily trying to win at the exact same speed.
Right.
But flying is just good right now. Like, people don't run cheap flyers for the most part. You're talking about Hornet Queens and Arbor Colossus as, like, the big end flyers. And early on, people are just going to take 4 or 6 damage from this, and you're going to get your value out of it really quickly.
Okay. That's the next one, Frontier Siege.
This is the most expensive siege at the entire set.
It's $2. So good. Oh my god, is this good. In Omnath or Kruphix, it's like, hey, have 4 fucking free mana turn. You earned it.
I bet you it's still not got a lot of upside at $2.
I wish it were cheaper, honestly, so I could get cheaper foils. Because this is an EDH card and that's it.
That's it. Yeah, I don't see this being played in standard.
Yeah, it is one of those cards that's like, this is amazing in EDH. It's so good. It's going to be like the cornerstone in a few decks. I don't like its current price of $2. It's weird that happens, but like, we're talking non-mythic rares in the post-mythic era. Like, EDH doesn't move the needle enough for there to be upside buying this.
From a design standpoint, like, where the hell does that second line of text come in? Like, we're talking about green here. Green has like 6 flyers in the history of green. We have to piece together every single green flying creature possible just to make this second line of text do anything. What the hell is that?
Well, in a dragon's deck.
We're going to see a lot more dragons. That's what it looks like. We're going to have green dragons all over. Dragons attack here.
Well, the problem is, if you have a dragon deck, right, you have expensive dragons, and you still probably choose cons. Flavor fail.
But no, the fact that like you can use either mode in a dragon deck means the versatility of it makes it good. And like you tailor to the situation. And cards that are modal like that are generally pretty good.
So what you're saying is underpriced at $2 right now?
I think it's overpriced at $2 and we can probably skip the rest of the sieges and call them all bombs. They're all worse than this. Like, they're not worse, but there's less upside.
Yeah. They're fun. They're
I really
fun.
Wish
That's
the
all.
White one cost three. If the white one costs three, like those, both those abilities are something Heroic would want before is just like, no, it's not going to happen.
But are they going to be limited bombs? Do you think that? Or limited decent?
They always do something relevant. Like, I think the green one's probably the least relevant in limited, actually. Cause like, by the time you get to four mana in limited, sure. Like, sure, you can go to seven real quick, but okay,
no.
And like,
I
there's not that many green flyers.
I have a bunch of green flyers. You just have to trust me on this. They're all over the place. They're a bunch
scare
of
them. Everywhere.
Scare them into using their removal
get,
on it.
So you've got to open like two Dromaka, and then I don't know what other green flyers are. It's only
she's just green blue.
You're
green
overanalyzing blue. This.
We can
waste some time on this because we saved time on all the other sieges we're skipping.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, let's waste time on Ghastly Conscription. It's at least a mythic.
It's $2.
This card is sweet.
Exile all cards from target player's graveyard in a face down pile, shuffle it and manifest them. Okay.
EDH players are right now asking, why wouldn't I just play Rise of the Dark Realms? And that's a good question.
Correct. That is literally the question that came into my mind.
Except you play this in your all free morph deck, and then you unmorph those guys.
Yes!
Using a Chromanticore to reveal them all!
Yes!
I worked it all in there, boys.
Full circle. Alright, next card is Jeskai Infiltrator, and it looks like this may be a bulk card as well.
Oh yeah.
Next card is Kolaghan, the Storm Spear. I like what it does. I don't know if it's going to be in a deck, but the dash is pretty good, and it pumps all your creatures, I've realized, not just your dragons. So.
Not just your dragons.
Yeah, this is easily the most, I would say easily the most relevant of the cards, because I could see it at the top end of a Mardu Tokens deck. Just being like, it even pumps all creatures you control, including yourself. So it just comes down as a 5-power flyer, which is, you know, demigod revenge-esque, and then pumps your entire squad. So like,
sure.
That's something. And then he's not making himself vulnerable to wrath effects, which is also nice. And he's out of Anger of the Gods range, which is another bonus. So I can see him as like a one or a two of. He's not going to be a huge player, but an interesting card.
Yeah, I mean, probably unlikely to have upside even at a dollar. I mean, it's basically, if it goes up, it would go up to $2 and you're not going to make
exactly.
any money.
Hey guys, what do we do with dragons? That's right, we get foils for $2 if we can.
I was just going to say you throw them all in a box and hope to find them 5 years from now.
Jason,
yeah, anybody that's
this.
Socked away Uvar Hellkites, probably.
Finance 101, quick Finance 101, why is this? Because there's new listeners out there that don't know much about finance. Why is that?
Well, this anything that could be potentially relevant to casual people, like while the card's in print, it's not going to be worth any money. If this gets any play in EDH, the foils will have a lot more upside than non-foils because you know a foil rare is more rare than a mythic non-foil, so there's going to be more upside because it's rare. So if you can get the foils for cheap, there's a lot more upside, and they'll probably never go below 2x the bulk price. So foils seem like a good play. I would trade for foils if I see them. I'm not going to go out and buy out TCG player of all the foil Culligans, especially not for $2.
Wait, but you just said.
I just said what?
Let me get.
No, you're right. He said it.
I have to message TCG player customer support. I'll be right back.
Oh, I said the T word. I see. I thought you accused me of,
No, I just had to go cancel my order of 3,000 foil Colligan Storm Furies.
Oh, you're making a joke. See, I thought you like, no, I thought I said that, like, oh, buy all the foils. Jeez.
Even better. This is wonderful.
I thought you're like, you're accusing me of saying buy foils and then later saying don't buy foils and then you're like,
no.
You're an asshole. So yeah, okay. Now we're on the same page.
All above. Oh, watch
Jason doesn't understand when he's not the funny one.
Not many people pull Jason's pants down, but it happens.
Ooh. I'm real sensitive to like saying something and contradicting myself two sentences later. So that's my weakness.
Oh, now we know your self point. We're going to use that to our advantage at some point in the future. All right. So the next card we got is Mardu Strike Leader. This one I'm excited about. This is a 2 and a black for a 3/2. Human warrior, whenever strike leader attacks, put a 2/1 black warrior token into the battlefield and has a dash of 3 and a black. It's only $2, and I think that's
probably about where it should be, to be fair. Like, it's, I think it's a solid, I think it's a solid card. The dash is actually plan B on this, not plan A. Like, a lot of the time you're gonna like, okay, I wanna get as many dash triggers before I actually get this into play, but, like, the chance that it just runs into some removal or whatever, anyway, like, just cast him on three is probably your best play. And then start pumping out warriors. But, I mean, he seems like a strong card. Maybe at the top end of mono black aggro, he'll see some play. Possibly some tokens decks. But at the same time, he's a 3-mana 3/2 with no way to protect himself. So it's not gonna be like destroying standard the way Pack Rat did or something.
So, yeah. One of the things, I want to ask you, Conley, about is, you know, Marcel's all about whatever the flavor of the set deck is. You know, it was all the different cons, and, now it's this black-white warriors. Do you think that's actually going to be a deck?
It very easily could be. I mean, warriors has a lot of wiggle room. Like, it could play the 2/3 that's pumping up toughness if people are playing Drowning Sorrow and things of that nature. Obviously, it's going to play the +1/+0 lord regardless. And the simple fact that it has two lords that have very good stats at those costs is already kind of a nice boon. If it gets enough value, yeah. Value guys, like this card in particular is not going to make or break a warrior deck. It's going to be right. some nice value that the warrior deck will look as an incentive, but it's not Geralt's Messenger plus Gravecrawler synergy. It's like, right. It's like random kind of like good guy in the list. If it gets, you know, a card or two of that power level, I could easily see warriors, being a thing. Right now, it still feels like a tier 2.5-ish deck to me at best. Like, probably worse than black-white tokens, black-white X tokens, yeah. Things of that nature. But it's starting to pick up, and with a third set, like one good 2-mana or 1-mana lord or something, like a Champion of the Parish style card, and all of a sudden you could have a warrior deck.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I think Marcel may be onto something here simply because there are so many early drops. The deck has a lot to choose from, so it feels like it could be there. Almost there anyways.
Yeah, I think it has 12 2-power 1-drops, right, that are warriors?
Yeah.
We're seeing evidence that people are actually trying to build it. If you look, like, there's some upward pressure on the price of cards like Caves of Koilos. And as near as I can figure, the reason there's moves on cards like that is people are getting the land base together for a potential black-white Warriors deck.
Blood Soak Champions.
And you think people are going to run Harsh Sustenance in those decks? It's a card. It's not like, it's an instant, only 3-mana, and it puts out quite a bit of damage, potentially.
I'm gonna have to look this card up real quick.
I would think they would do Crackling Doom.
It's in the set.
Oh.
I could go splash for that.
Yeah, I see it.
I mean, if it's playing a third color, then it'll play Crackling Doom, but I don't know if that warrior deck can afford a third color. It's gotta hit its two drops on turn two, and they both are double color.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can afford to run, like, you need tap lands out the wazoo if you're playing a third color, and I don't think an aggro deck could really get away with that. So it would pretty much have to be two colors in order to put up any kind of fight, in my opinion.
Okay.
Alright.
So next card here is Mastery of the Unseen. This is gonna be an interesting limited card, but I don't think it's gonna be anything in standard, so it's gonna be a bulk.
I disagree with you on this card. I actually have faith for this card. I think if there is going to be a control deck, it's going to be some sort of like, you just have to keep wrathing the board and keep just killing everything that happens. And this is the kind of card where it's every creature you control. So it's not like you're only gaining one life when you flip it. So if you like activate this 2 or 3 times and then flip it over, like it seems like the potential like late game life gain that you need. Again, I'm not trying to like say that you're getting Sphinx's Revelation out of this or anything like that, but you kind of have to piece that together in order to have this like any sort of late game control deck again outside of like blue black. And I think this could play a player there. I think this could be a 2 or 3 of in a deck like that.
Just so you're clear, it's whenever a permanent you've told turn face up, and when you're manifesting cards in your blue white control deck or whatever, those things probably don't have morph costs. So you can't turn them face up, which means you never gain life off them.
Yeah.
Seems
I mean, like, this seems, I think that you're like talking about a deck that doesn't run any creatures. Like, I don't know.
I mean, what blue white control deck is, it has to be a blue white control deck running creatures that have morph.
Right, but like...
No, you don't have to have morph.
They don't have to have morph. It's just their casting cost, yeah.
They just have to be creatures, period. I still don't know.
You've got three creatures maybe in the deck, but you're playing Elf Death,
How many creatures are you running in your Wrath of Regis?
I mean, I get it, but like, I don't know. I feel like this card has some potential, is all I'm saying. Like, it's bulk,
Yeah.
But if enchantments weren't such a big, like, this has a planeswalkery feel to it, like it can win a control mirror out of the sideboard or whatever, but enchantments are so popular right now that people just have so much enchantment hate. I couldn't really see playing this over an Elspeth or, you know, even a Jace or something. Like, planeswalkers are just more reliable at doing these exact types of things these days.
Or Heliod.
This reminds me of Luminar.
Heliod does the same thing if you just want two power stuff.
Yeah.
This card reminds me of Luminarch Ascension more than it does, like,
that card was good.
That card was good, and it also was not worth any money, despite being good, so I think that pretty much puts a pin in this debate.
Yeah, sure.
So this is probably worse than Luminarch Ascension, and therefore has less upside, which is nothing.
So next card is Mob Rule, which is going to be Bolt.
Are you... Oh, Jesus. Get foils. This is Insurrection in EDH. You win the game. You play this and you win the game. Almost always. Unless they're clogging the board with a lot of small creatures, which they probably aren't. This is Insurrection number 2. And it's easier to cast because it's not triple red. Mob Rule gives me an erection as an EDH player.
Well then.
So.
This is EDH Viagra because I'm just
I'm not going to disagree with that, I guess.
Yeah. Talk about my boner some more.
Also, this will pop up randomly in Standard and Sideboard. There's one over two of. Like, it's just going to beat some decks, or it's going to take all of Sidisi's tokens, or take all Mono Green stuff. Like, it's not going to be a good card, but it'll see some Sideboard play.
I don't know if EDH is going to drive it above bulk in the next year, so you can probably just wait until these go to nothing and then scoop them.
That's where they're starting.
This other card, next card, I want to see go down from its current price, because it's going to see play in Standard, but $30 for Monastery Mentor. Goodness, that seems a little pricey there.
The thing I hate most about this is why the hell isn't a mythic? It is a gray ogre with prowess that makes 1/1s when you cast spells. Like, I could literally see this card being a common. I would be like okay with it a common. It would most likely be an uncommon in most sets. And it's a mythic?
So the question is, do you think it's a mythic because it's that powerful?
It's a mythic because it's a constructed card.
Yeah,
no, it's a mythic because it's a constructed card. That's the only reason. Like, Imperious Perfect was an uncommon, and it was stronger than this in Limited, I would say. Because you didn't have to have non-creature spells, it just did everything on its own. Like, this card, there's no reason for this card to be a friggin' mythic. It bugs me. I don't know, like, I literally see $30, and I would expect a $3. I think this should be a Monastery Swiss Spear. I don't know. Whatever. That's my rant. I'm done. Card's good.
Yeah. Perfect.
Damn. I mean, no, I agree with the same thing.
It's not $30 good, I know that.
Yeah, it's probably not $30 good, but it's definitely going to make an impact. Like, I want to see what this card can do, and I don't know if this is a real thing, but I want to see a combo deck with, like, this Young Pyromancer and, like, Battle Him, Infernal, or whatever, the Sacrifice of Creatures.
An Infernal Plunge.
Yeah, like, that deck's already kind of floated around and, like, with Young Pyromancer, and I want it to be a thing. Jason, you've got to talk about every EDH BS combo so far. I don't want to hear about it.
Combo?
Right.
Yeah, Mob Rule combos well with their creatures.
That's all EDH is combo. Like, that's it.
Corbin, I got a combo, your face and my ass.
Wow.
Great.
Yeah, Corbin, jeez. I don't think your mic can handle it when you get excited. It just breaks up, so I don't know what you can do. Next, we're moving to Right Path Monastery Siege, because we already why is that $3? Jason, this is the most expensive one. What's going on here?
Painseer was a $12 pre-order on Star City.
Painseer is really good for what it's worth, but I would say that people want to frost tighten up their permanents in EDH probably. I mean, the drawing an extra card and discarding a card is like something, I guess. Doesn't seem like a great card to me, but it seems like something you could want to play, I guess. It's like a 3-man.
Yeah, certain. This is like a bad privilege position, but it's in blue, so for Pillow Fort, I could see wanting that. And like, if you don't need the Pillow Fort effect, having the loot seems fine.
Zur players might want to do this thing up. Like, Zur players are dedicated mothers, so.
I read a lot of EDH forums, and I haven't really seen any chatter about this card. So like, I can see the applications now, but like, normally, I rely on people that are really serious about EDH to notice those things before me, and I haven't heard any chatter at all about this card, but that, I don't know. I think everything we've said about it makes sense, so I still don't like it at $3. I wouldn't like it at $2.
So Ojutai, Soul of the Winter, is a Azorius legendary dragon, and it's probably going to stay bulk at a dollar.
It might even go lower than that. This is one of the least appealing of the these Lord Dragons, in my opinion. It's the most expensive. At 7 mana. Its size is whatever. Vigilance is a slight upside. And then its ability is, like, bad opposition. Like, you can't tap down lands, so, yeah.
It's like an Archon of the Triumvirate, which was another bulk card.
Yeah,
it's a Frost Titan that costs one more, loses a power, gains flying and vigilance, but sucks otherwise. It doesn't have the comes in play ability.
Yeah, it's a Frost Titan that's bad with Rite of Replication, so EDH players are not even going to use it for that.
That's true. But like, when I first read the card, I wanted it to be Frost Titan, but it's not. It's not
we all did, Frost Titan. Ryan. We all did. All
right, so we're moving past Outpost Siege. That's the Red Siege. And Palace Siege, which is the Black Siege.
The black one, I think it'll be good in EDH and like painful quandary, you know, polluted bonds type cards, but like, that's so fringe, it's not gonna move the needle at a dollar.
I still think you might be able to do something in a sideboard of a grindy deck, but then like a whip or Abzan deck might have some legroom.
I think we've done enough of these set reviews to remember a few cards that we like just as much that were never worth anything, so I think that kind of informs our viewpoint. The more set of these set reviews we do, the more we notice we say, wow, I really like this card. Bulk, don't buy it.
So here we have a card that I think is really interesting, but it's not going to do much. It's called Rally the Ancestors. Conley, can you think of something? I know you like
Barker. You're not getting any secrets from me.
Oh.
But I do think this card is more playable than its dollar price. Like, this is the type of card that might sit around for 2 years and do nothing, and then all of a sudden it is, what is the card I'm thinking of? Colorless White, return all your permanent, Second Sunrise. Like, it has that powerful type of effect. It just needs to find the right subset of cards to work with it. The fact that X does not need to be all that much to potentially win the game, like you could do some type of Revelark combo out of your graveyard for 4 or 5 mana and just bring back 3 or 4 creatures and just win. Like there are some interesting things that I think this can do, that just make it into a 4 or 5 mana win condition. So I don't necessarily know if that deck exists now, and if it does, I have not discovered it, but this could be easily be a modern win condition, like ad nauseum style, that type of card, where now, it's just, you know, it's your win.
Why would you play this over Immortal Servitude?
Immortal Servitude only return, that's white/black, right? Is it 3 or 4?
It's three.
Okay. And then you return each creature with Carver cost X. So you couldn't like set up a, like, I have a Carrion Feeder plus my, Devoted Druid plus my whatever and return them all and then set like something up like that. You would have to set up like all the same casting cost combo, which I think is going to be significantly harder to piece together. And I think that mana cost is also a little more prohibitive.
I think that I could play this in my Carador deck.
Oh no, we got like, Corbin talking about his decks now.
I don't think you're gonna like not being able to attack with the creatures.
Why would I ever attack with creatures in Carador?
I don't know. Why would you build Carador?
So I can combo people to death? No, this return for 7 mana, this brings back Revelark, Karmic Guide, and Viscerasir, and like it just brings back all your combo pieces to go off with.
Do we like it at a buck?
It'll probably drop.
It's not gonna be a popular card just because it's very intricate in what it needs to be doing, so like it's kind of like Genesis Wave, like that style card. Like it might shoot up later on when casual players start loving it, but I don't think it's going to be like a huge standard player.
Yeah.
So next card is Sage Eye Avengers. This is going to be a great card in limited, but I don't think it's going to do anything in standard, so it's going to stay at its bulk price.
Oh, this is punishing in limited.
Yeah,
it's pretty busted in limited. Yeah,
this card's stupid in limited. I just don't want to play against it.
Yeah. This should be the Mythic, and Monastery Minotaur should be the rare.
Yeah, switch them.
So next card here is a bulk card, but it's part of a 3-part card combo in Standard. You get infinite turns.
This Sage of the Hours and what?
And then the Primix, the green guy that returns a green creature to your hand. Every turn.
Sure. Roaring Primadox?
Yeah. For 7 mana, you could get infinite turns.
I like infinite turns.
I'm sleeving that up right now as we speak.
I mean, I'm not putting this in my Vorel deck.
Oh my gosh, you play the dirtiest commander, Jason.
Keep in mind that this could just be your 7-mana 10-10 reach. Like, it can always pump up itself. It doesn't need another creature in play. So it's kind of like a pretty fun card to think about playing, at least.
That's true. I don't know how mastodons have reach. It seems a little silly, but whatever.
It's massive. It's so big.
Yeah, you see how big those tusks are? You're jealous.
They're four feet off the ground.
You're jealous of those tusks.
Sandstop mastodon is a strong, independent green mastodon that don't need no other creatures.
All right, I'm jealous. I admit it.
You should be.
There we go. We finally got it out of you, Corbin. We got black now. So next card is Scroll of the Master. Scroll of the Bulk?
I don't know.
Sure.
I go back and forth on this card. I'm like, this is so potentially powerful, but it's so potentially dirtly, but it's so I don't know.
It's real dirtly. That sounds like you should play it in your Varel deck, Jason.
Maybe you should play it in your Curador.
No, my decks just kill people.
That 3-mana activation is probably just too much of a, like, you want this card to be like, play all my spells, then use this thing to kill them. Like, this was like my Shrine of Burning Rage or whatever, but the fact you have to pay 3-mana into this, target a creature, while it sits there, like, susceptible to removal, meaning you probably have to combine this with some type of hexproof thing. I don't know. It seems like a lot of work. Maybe it sees a little bit of play. Like, if there was Invisible Stalker in the format, maybe this would see play. I don't think we have Invisible Stalker, so.
That would be sweet. Invisible Stalker, a bunch of bounce and removal.
I just imagined a Born State where this had four counters on it, which seems pretty easy to get to.
I mean, I'm certainly testing. I think if there's any deck in Standard that's going to have a chance to play it, it's definitely going to be blue-white, and it's only a sideboard card against decks like Mardu and stuff like that. They're just killing all of your creatures, and you just bring it in as like, okay, all I have to do is resolve a guy, and I get to attack with it, and it's going to have two or three, four counters on it. But I don't see widespread application by any means. I don't think most aggro decks can adapt it.
I don't think aggro wants to waste a deck slot on something like this.
Well, like I said, there's like these attrition matchups after sideboards that you actually want cards like this for. Like right now I'm running Return from the Ranks for the same reason. And it's just cause like Mardu one for ones you a ton of times and then all of a sudden like you just return three or four guys and they can't deal with them.
So. If we get one mulligan to like later say, oh, I always believed in that card, I think I would.
This would not be mine.
this would be my soft maybe. Like, I don't see any application for it, but I reserve the right to not be surprised later if it does something.
Alright, you get that.
Mine would be one of the sieges. I don't know which one yet, but like one of them's going to see play and we're not going to see it.
You're just saying that because we all missed Jeskai Ascension.
I think post-rotation.
Ascendancy.
They said some of the cards are going to be better after the new set is released and some are better right now, so we'll see what happens, but I'm pretty sure.
Let's talk about this next mythic that's sold out at some places and rising quickly at others.
Because it's very good.
Shaman of the Great Hunt, the 4-2, 4-drop haste. Whenever a creature you control deals damage to a player, put a counter on it. 4-mana, draw a card for each creature with power 4 or greater if you have Ferocious.
That ability is insane.
Yep.
Like, okay, so just picture this guy in red-green devotion. Like, they play this, and they draw 6 cards with it instantly, and then they attack. And then all their squad gets bigger. Like, this card is, like, Garrick for those types of decks. And then in any other, like, fair deck, just, like, teamer, mid-range, or whatever, if you untap with this and you get to draw 2 cards off it, it's an insane card in so many different matchups. Like, its second ability is not, it's got something to be desired there. It's relevant to a certain degree, but it's certainly not why you're playing the card. But a 4-mana, 4-2 haste is already strong, and then just like card advantage, like, okay, I'm down. I think
it's hard. Why are all the really good cards in the set mythic?
Because
this is another one that like
print good cards.
It's not even named anything. It's Shaman of the Great Hunt. It's not even
like all the legends are rares. I think they like accidentally put the wrong stamp on all the cards this time around.
I mean, it would certainly make more sense to have your bulky commander dragons as mythic and your playable cards as rare. Then again, I mean, maybe they want it. They're set to have some value so people don't crap on it like they did Dragon's Mace.
I think they accidentally made Soulfire Grandmaster a legend and then someone built an EDH deck with that as the general and made Magic miserable.
Ah, there we go. Figured it out. So at $8, what do you think about that price? I like the card.
It's actually up to 11 on TCG Player, so
great googly moogly.
I would not be surprised if this hovered back and forth in the $10 to $20 range, depending on if it won a tournament or not recently, because this will be a tournament played card and it will see success. So like, if those decks are winning or popular at the moment, it's obviously going to be a little more valuable. But when it's kind of, you know, in the background, it'll be like, you know, 10, 12 bucks, something like that.
I think there's certainly upside here if you can get it at the pre-release. You know, this is Tuesday. We don't know what will happen to the price between now and Saturday. But if it's still around this $10, $11 mark, it seems like a really good card to trade for at your pre-release.
It's going to pair well with the Phoenix, too. And that, it gets recursion with the Phoenix, and the Phoenix gets bigger after two hits, so then you could draw a card after two.
Yeah, yeah. That the synergy of the Phoenix getting larger is really, really nice.
And I just saw that two toughness, and I'm like, this is going to run into courses all day and die.
I mean, that is true, but the thing is, this guy doesn't have to do any attacking to, like, actually be relevant. Everything else that's attacking is relevant, and he's got an ability that lets you draw cards. So it's not like, there's literally no point in the game where you're top decking this guy and going, oh, well, he does nothing for me. Like, maybe you have to wait to untap him or something.
He at least draws a single card.
Yeah. He's also, very good with, token producers like Xenagos, here's 3 2/2s coming at you, all getting bigger. I don't know. He's got multiple applications. He's not as good as the black guy when it comes to being a Hell Rider, but the fact that he has haste means he might put out just as much damage as that guy, and then your tokens are getting bigger for the next turn. Right. So.
And honestly, if you talk about coursers, they play their courser on 3, then they untap on their fourth turn if they're ahead of you or whatever. Do they attack and risk you getting a 5/3 when you swing back? You know, or do they? Are they put in a position where they had to chump block with a caryatid? It actually does put some pressure on those coursers because of the haste.
If it sticks around, is this drawing cards. Ugh. So next card is a Shamanic Revelation. This draws you cards, but it's
real bulky.
Yeah, it's
bad. Everyone that thinks it's good is
bad.
Everyone in EDH that thinks it's good is still bad, right, Jason? Tell them.
Yeah, so take your Collective Unconscious out of your EDH deck and replace it with this. What's that? You weren't playing Collective Unconscious? Oh, okay. Moving on.
We heard that line before in a couple episodes again, and it's coming and making a comeback.
Thanks, this could be a small player in Mono Green Devotion just because it kind of does what's the card I'm thinking of?
Harmonize?
No, 2 colors, 2 green, 3/3. That gains you life for each pip.
Caramatris Feast?
Oh.
No.
It's a creature.
It's Caramatris Acolyte, right?
Oh.
No, it's Nissa something.
This block, gotcha.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. Regardless, this could do a very similar thing while also drawing a card, so I could see it as a sideboard in mono green, but that's about it.
Okay. Next card is Shu Yin, the Silent Tempest. This is the black, the Jeskai legendary guy, and it's at $1.
Probably hey, Jason, what do you know about this card? Nothing, right?
I got to spoil it, yay!
You did?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the only
one. Why I tossed that one up?
I gave it to a few Gather Magic people, but I helped spoil it, and I got to see it early and write an article about it, and I like this as sort of a toned down, able to go wide Rafiq. Where you don't have to necessarily go all Voltron with him. He's a tiny leader's general, so that's cool. I like him, but I don't have any illusions that just because I spoiled him, he's better than he actually is. I think he might be bulk for a while.
I think he's probably the best card to set.
Oh, wait, Jason. No way.
Jason, I have an actual commander question that I don't know the answer to, and I probably should. If you pay this, play this guy as your general, can you actually make red and white mana?
We haven't discussed this on the show already. So
we have
discussed this earlier. It would be a great time to
take,
yes,
to take like 10 minutes out of our day and
I see.
So Corbin, you could listen to the earlier part of the cast and then you can find out about that.
Maybe I will.
Yeah, it's the reason Memnarch is a general, Corbin.
Oh, so otherwise, Memnarch would be like... Alright, so next card we're going to...
That was good, that's all I needed. I believe you, okay.
The next card is another card that Marcel's going to have trouble pronouncing the name. Go!
Is it Targamoyf?
What's the hard part? Is it Drifting?
Silumgar. The Drifting Death.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
$1.50.
It's probably Silumgar, and some nerd at home is like, nah, it's got Greek roots. Nah. But
this card is secretly legit.
It seems okay-ish.
The card is, so first of all, Hexproof makes many things that would not be playable playable. Second of all, 7 toughness is a hell of a lot of toughness on a Hexproof creature, meaning this is not dying in combat very often, especially with its ability, or dying to, like, Anger of the Gods or whatever. So you're basically going to have to cast your Destroy All Dragons mode of your Black Wrath or or end hostilities. That's the only two ways you're really going to get rid of this. But the big thing, like, so it has Hexproof, which is relevant for things like the, I don't think we've covered him yet, but the guy who delves creatures and gains their keywords, which is kind of cool. This gives you both flying and hexproof, which is already an insane combination. So there's that potential use for him. And, you know, wrapping the board is something that blue-black control would potentially love, especially since if they are playing their dragon wrath with this card, like they get to have this on board, still wrath and leave this around, which is like a bit of upside that Perilous Vault does not have going for it.
Boy, it may have this has the ability with, even if you assume that you don't have other dragons and this is the only thing you're going to be attacking with to give creatures -1, it clears out a bunch of tokens that would otherwise, you know, that blue-black would need like a vault or something awkward to deal with.
Or are the Mardu warrior tokens on the ground? Oh, they'd all die.
Yeah, like this could be Prognostic Sphinx level of card. It's significantly more limited in that it's legendary, so you can't just draw two of them and get the double wrath effect. That'd be insane. And it is blue-black, where it's not mono-blue. But it's certainly a card that if it popped up as a 1-of or a 2-of in a lot of these control decks in the main deck, I would not be surprised.
So at $1.50, I mean, that honestly probably seems about right.
Yeah, that's probably like, your rares just don't go anywhere, and you're not going to play this as a 4 of like almost anywhere. I mean, it probably has some casual application just because it's hexproof and commander has to be something.
I don't hate this long term. As far as just dragons go, like, it seems like this is an inclusion in your dragon commander deck. It seems like it could be an inclusion in plenty of people's dragon kitchen table deck. Like, it's probably honestly not a bad pickup at like $1, even if you may have some people who want it in standard, even if it's never more than $1, $1.50, but I like it long term as well.
All right, so next card is one of the exciting cards of the set, the Soulfire Grand Master.
This card upsets me.
Upsets you?
Shouldn't it be mythic?
Well, no, it should definitely be mythic, but here's the thing. I'm a game designer. I work on, you know, card designs of my own. So let me tell you about this card. It's colors in a white. It's a 2-2. Let me get a 3-2. It's a 3-2 lifelink. And it has the ability, instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink. Isn't that sweet? I think that's a pretty sweet card right there. Now let's go ahead and put some garbage, puke, bullcrap text. We just gave our instants and sorceries. We've had 20 years of instants and sorceries. They just now got lifelink for the first time ever. And we're going to put all this other bull junk on here and make that text, like, get muddied up? What are you doing? Just leave the card simple and clean and nice and move all that other trash text to a different card. Card's good.
Because I don't want my time warps to have lifelink, but I do want them every turn.
I mean, that's actually really, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this card the past 2 weeks. We honestly didn't even consider if it should have that second ability. I don't disagree with you. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah, is this card really $25 though?
No, it's not. Sold. No,
I mean,
sold
the way I look at it is like in standard, this card, it's okay, but I feel like it's fighting for Seeker of the Way spot and isn't even necessarily always better than Seeker of the Way.
Yeah, that's it. I remember we talked a lot about that last week. So I guess the only fresh opinion would Conley, do you think that this is better than Seeker of the Way?
In certain applications, potentially. I don't know if any of you have looked at my, Dictate of the Twin Gods, list that I've worked on for a while. This has some potentially nice application there because the deck is like 20 burn spells, zero permanents that aren't Dictate. And then he would have to run this, probably as a sideboard card against aggressive decks, but he would kind of serve a similar to, the Satyr, whatever the guy
fire
when you,
drinker.
Yeah, fire drinker, whatever, whenever you hit them with a burn spell, you kill one of their creatures. Like, it kind of serves that, where I get to point my burn spells at their dudes, and then gain that life back just to keep myself alive until I can get to, like, a Resolute Archangel or something. And in that application specifically, I have zero permanents main deck, so everyone has to board up, take out all their Bioblights and stuff like that, so it comes in kind of just a surprise thing. But in terms of, like, I want to play this in my Jeskai mid-range deck, like, it could easily replace Seeker of the Way just because it's a little more consistent. Like, the always lifelink is a big deal, I think, when you're just, you know, how many times have you been watching a Star City event or whatever, and people are in top deck mode, One's got like, you know, a raise the alarm, the other one's got a seeker delay, and they're just like, you know, doing whatever back and forth with 2-2 bear crap.
Right.
Like, at least this guy is like threatening some real things out there where seeker doesn't really do that. But at the same time, like, this guy doesn't have the ability to swing as strong or fast as seeker the way. So right. I can see them coexisting. $25 seems absurd to me, but maybe this is like a modern gem or something like that. I don't know. Like, the idea of time warp plus rebuy seems pretty expensive to pull off and keep your 2-2 alive while that happens. But who knows, maybe somebody will get that to work. Overall, I would say this is like a pretty solid utility card for the most part with some potential combo abuse, but $25 seems a little high to me.
Yeah, this isn't M15 where the good cards in the set never go down in value.
Hey, and standard is a 2-card combo for how much mana? It's like
a lot.
14 mana.
A lot.
14? No. It'd be 11 plus 4 would be 15 mana for Emrakul mana. You could have an unlimited combo, 2-card combo with standard.
That doesn't even work because it exiles itself.
Yeah. Oh, the dope card.
Yeah.
Oh.
9 plus 4 is 13.
Yeah, trespass takes it exiles itself, and this says put it into your hand instead of your graveyard as it resolves. But that card specifically says exile it on its text, so it doesn't even work.
Oh, there you go.
You can't even live the dream.
Damn it. All right, well, we can live the dream with this card, the Soul Flayer. This is the black, two black for a 4/4 demon. It has delve, and when you remove a creature card that's exiled with it, it gets all its cool abilities.
I will be using this card, and I will hopefully be winning tournaments with this card.
Oh, hold on. The question that we all want to know is Chromanicore part.
Yes. You get your Chromanicore. You get your Chromanicore and your Hexproof Flying Dragon on there, and then maybe a charge thing, maybe not. But that's like, that's game already. 4/4, Hexproof, Flying, Lifelink, First Strike, Trample, Vigilance. What do they do?
Alright, so the card is clearly sweet. It's $3 right now. What do you think about that price, guys?
That's the highest rare.
This could very easily be a Tombstalker-ish card in standard, like, Tombstalker cost 2 more mana than this for plus and plus 1, but didn't get that other sweet line of text. And like, Tombstalker is a very respectable magic card. She's playing Legacy even. So like, this could easily see that much play in standard. I don't know if $3 is where it should be, but like, you know, $2 is probably not unreasonable.
Okay, I got a little worried just because Karen Wanderer was a card out of Lorwyn that, it did the same thing, and it didn't have delve, and it cost 5 mana always. It could get a lot of abilities, though, and it never went anywhere price-wise. So does the delve really, you know, kind of make it jump that next level?
First of all, the delve is huge. Like, this could theoretically bring back a dredge-style deck that isn't Sidisi, for example. Also, remember that one of the most popular cards in the format, if not the most popular card, is Sylvan Caryatid, which has Hexproof. So this has access to like Hexproof and Lifelink are probably the two biggest possible things on this. Indestructible is also big, but I don't know if anything in the format is indestructible. But if you can give this Hexproof and Lifelink, then that is a card that just wins games. Like, Baneslayer Angel was a strong card for a reason, and this could be a 2-mana version of that. Now, there's going to be plenty of decks that can't take advantage of this, but when you start putting this into DC and it's costing 2 mana and coming out like haste hexproof lifelink or whatever, like that's like a super, super scary thing. I just see it as like a very strong card in these like Mardu mid-range decks, possibly, Sultai mid-range decks, and then specifically combo decks built around it by itself. It's not going to be like, you know, Jeskai Ascendancy where it's like the best deck in standard, but I think it has enough applications that a lot of different people are going to be trying to do a lot of different things with it.
So do you think can we give it First Strike, Hexproof, and Death Touch? Cause that's living the dream.
And Trample.
Well,
I mean, you can.
Hornet Queen gets a Death Touch and Flying even. Need First Strike off something.
The one thing I think the one thing to note about this card too is like, kindly hit on, there's gonna be a lot of people brewing with this in the first like couple of weeks, and there's gonna be different styles of how to approach this. I think if we are going to see any rare in this set that's just gonna suddenly like spike and be a $10 card overnight, it's going to be this card. And it's not saying it's gonna stay there, but just because you're gonna see so many different approaches to it, that it, you know, initially until the supply is there, this could be the really expensive card out of this. Like, not the most expensive card in the set total, but as far as the rares go.
Okay, I'll buy that.
I think it'll go down because I think people that aren't smart enough when it comes to brewing, and so they're going to fall flat on their face, they're going to sell off their copies, and you can buy it, and then it'll shoot up to an absurd price.
I mean, I kind of think it would go maybe the other way in that if it has a good first weekend or two, you see it go from $3 to $7 or $8, and then it comes down as a lot of copies get opened and it's good, but it's only in one deck in the format, that sort of thing. But I do actually kind of like trading for it this weekend at $2 to $3 because it's honestly not that huge of a risk for something that, you know, a lot of people are excited about.
So Supplant Form is a nice bulk card, which is the next one we have.
Supplant Form.
No.
Supplant.
Supplant. It's a verb. Supplant is not an adjective. Yeah, I think we touched on this. I don't like this effect.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's a lot it's more mana than other things that made tokens in an EDH. Like you just want right of replication, I think. Right. In limited, this could be a lot of fun, actually.
Sure.
Next card is Tasigur, the Golden Fang.
This is a real six drop delve card, am I right?
Yes,
this guy is slightly worse, or no, he's probably significantly worse than Soul Flare, but he does have a couple upsides. One, the fifth point of toughness. I don't know if that really matters, but just the fact that you can make him cost one mana.
Lots of Siege Rhino.
Like, for example,
Stoke Flames.
This is better than all, like, Hooting Mandrills or whatever, most likely, which people were considering playing in certain formats. He's legendary. His ability is kind of neat, though. So I don't know what you can really do with that ability because it's kind of expensive. Doesn't really seem like it fits with the card.
You can make friends in EDH with that ability. Oh, you got four players at a table and you need like a removal spell, you say to your buddy, hey, if I flip up a removal spell for this guy's thing, let me have it. So it lets you get cool political stuff.
You can get anything from your graveyard.
Yeah, you can get anything, but it's of their choice. So.
Right. Yeah.
But overall, like, he's legendary, so you're not going to see as many copies of him as the other guy. Also, his upside, I think, is slightly lower, if not significantly lower, because he can't protect himself. So I would say that he is not worth as much as the other dude is, and that currently his price is the same. So yeah. Do not buy this guy.
I heard his price was going up because he's being bought out by some Japanese speculators.
Sure.
So. I mean, if his second ability was better, or he had like Death Touch or, you know, Trample or something, like he doesn't really have evasion, he doesn't have a way to protect himself, and his ability costs four mana, and you might not even be playing with those colors, so, I don't know.
Oh, this makes me feel good, because I did the QS, spoiler review, and I was real, bearish on this card initially, and like, somebody accused me of being, like, essentially mentally retarded for not liking this card, so. To hear you say that you don't like it as much as Soul Flare, which is the way I felt also, makes me feel a little better. We can be wrong together, or I'll just be right.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the fifth toughness really is a thing. It can block a lot of things to survive Stoke, like Ryan said, that I think if it's got anything going for it, that's what it is.
Yeah, it does get to block Rhino, which is nice, but theoretically, if you're playing with the other guy correctly, and he's got First Strike, Death Touch, Hexproof, or whatever,
that's true.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I just think the other card just has so much more you could do with it, whereas this guy's kind of, you just get what you pay for, which is a 4/5 for 2 or 3 mana, and then, like, he's Nemesis Immortals. I've played with Nemesis Immortals, it's a solid card, but it doesn't just, like, take over games the way I would like it to.
Now, I know that you've probably experimented with Necropolis Fiend. Why did that not get there?
Necropolis Fiend's just too expensive. 7 colorless mana is a lot to be delving. The body was nice, but usually the ability is not that relevant afterwards. I was running him as like a 1 or 2 of in most of my dredge decks just because he naturally fights the kind of what the deck wants to be doing by eating up other creatures, and then he is very weak to, you know, infinite amounts of removal, like from a hero's downfall to, you know, to a burn spell plus a block or something, because you generally need to like spend him as your front line once you've invested that amount of resources. And I don't know, he never quite impressed me the way I would like him to.
Okay, so are you impressed by this next card, Temporal Trespass? I was down on this card. I heard a couple good things about it, but I'm still not super stoked about it.
I mean, I wrote an article about this a little bit, just talking about the Riddle of Lightning applications with it, which I think are potentially real. It gives you kind of that Draco explosion that's a little bit easier to set up. But it overall, like the fact that it exiles itself is pretty bad, and the fact that the Planeswalkers in standard that you would want to combo with this are not necessarily blue, like Jace is not a very good Planeswalker. It makes my love affair with this not nearly as high.
Jace is the best Planeswalker in the format. What are you talking about?
Graveyard theme.
Yes.
Graveyard.
Okay, so Temporal Trespass is $6. I mean, I'd point to Temporal Mastery, which is kind of the last one we saw, also a mythic. That was played a little in Standard and was like $6 to $8. It's currently just under $6.
Wasn't Temporal Mastery $25 when it first came out, or 30 or something ridiculous?
It was 20 for like a second. Yeah.
No, it was super high, and like the foils were like 150 or something stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, once it hit in like Miracles and Legacy, so I mean, it's $6 now, and I think that in the end they probably end up being of a similar power level. I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing this going too far past $6 because.
I think it'll go down before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Temporal Mastery, there was so much excitement about it, made Personal Tutor go up. Like, it was a significant event. This card's printing, not a significant event, and I think that's telling.
And the other point I wanted to make with Temporal Mastery is that it's from Avacyn Restored, which was only open for 3 months, albeit in higher per draft numbers than this will be, but this is just going to be around a lot longer than Mastery was.
So next card is Temur, War Shaman. This seems like a pre-release bulk card that we did those pre-releases again.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, it is kind of a sweet card. I mean, 6 mana for 6/7 worth or whatever. I don't think it'll be super popular, but if you had, like, a Birthing Pod type of deck, maybe you could see this at the top end of it or something along those lines. Like, stronger than the...
Yosin? Is that the name of the...
The thing that makes people fast. He gives like green creatures.
The first counter. The verse counter guy is what I was thinking.
Geese and the Wanderer Bard.
Oh, that guy, one. Sure. Yeah, theoretically if you wanted this as your six drop or something, maybe it'd be cool. But yeah, he's pretty, definitely take him in your limited decks. Slam him, win the game, enjoy all that stuff. That second ability is ridiculously powerful in this format.
Yeah.
Fight.
Honestly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's silly. I like fighting.
So next card.
Okay. Food chain.
No, you can't use the food chain mana to use that ability.
Oh, lame. Never mind.
Yeah. So it's not even as good as Mythal. Sorry, Marcel. We got us ahead of ourselves. Do you want to read the card?
Not really. It's Torment Elemental and you can do something with it from exile. And you can't use the food chain ability. So what can you do with this? So you could play it as a value creature in a delve deck. You got flying. So you do this with soul. Player, and then you cast it later on to open up the board.
Whenever it attacks, tap all creatures defending player. Well, it's like it falters, right? It's a blue falter.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much of me not liking this card is me correctly assessing it, and how much is me being super disappointed that it's not even as good as Mist Hollow Griffin with Food Chain.
Yeah, well, it's $2. I think that's probably where it's going to be at, or it's going to be a dollar bulk.
Well, I'll say this.
Good cards are $2. Bad cards are not $2.
I'll say this. Because it's mythic, if some sort of thing happens where you have a blue deck with a bunch of creatures that wants a 3/5 flying falter at the top end, and that does well in the first 2 weeks, or someone's playing it at the Pro Tour, of all the mythics we talked about, this has the potential to actually go up the most because it starts so low.
I like that scenario there, Corbin.
It doesn't matter. Like, somebody showed up playing, Todd Anderson showed up at the last one playing like robots with whatever that one card from M15 was, the uncommon. Like, people show up at the Pro Tour and hype can get around decks whether or not they're good. Like, if, you know, some sort of deck like this were to come about, this, because it's a mythic and starting at $2, would have the highest returns.
That's fair.
And to be equipped to deal with that sort of spike, you would basically have to pre-order them or go aggressively at them at the pre-release. So, like, unless you're betting money on that scenario, you're not going to be able to really get enough copies in time to benefit. So you're going to have to decide now if you think that scenario is at all likely. I'm personally not betting my money on that.
I mean, it's the kind of thing at the pre-release this weekend, if I see one in someone's binder, like, I'll be like, hey, I'll throw that. Let's throw that in. It's $2. Like, it's $2 in trade, and you're likely trading other cards, which you could be reasonably sure are going to go down too. Like, yeah. it's a low risk at trading this weekend.
So what about trading Ugin for $30? What would you do? Would you try to get him out of your binder as soon as possible, or would you try to pick him up?
Jace Tex.
You don't like Ugin, Jason, or?
I don't like him as much as I like Karn. I don't know.
He has some sweet applications. Like, I would not be surprised if this saw play in many of the same decks that play Karn, like Tron. He could easily be a two of. Just the ability to wrath a board is something that Karn can't do. And that deck already plays things like O-Stone. Like, O-Stone you put 8 man into it and you kill everything. This, you put 8 man into it and it kills everything and then leaves you around with a planeswalker that wins the game.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
The thing is, you know, when you have your 3 Tron pieces on turn 3, they make 7 mana, which is obviously perfect for Karn and not for this. But like you said, the Wrath is a good point because at the point you want to dump all your mana into that O stone, you know, you're past your third land anyway. So it's not the dream start that Karn can be, but it can do some stuff that Karn can't.
Yeah, and it's like a 2-of or something. It's not like a big, huge player, but it just seems powerful enough. All those abilities are very relevant. The third one's obviously game-ending, and it only takes 2 upticks of +3 or +2. And because that +2 hits players, you can kill planeswalkers with this quite often. Like 3 loyalty counters on a planeswalker is not uncommon for us to see in standard. Also, this is colorless, which just naturally means it's going to see more play because all the various Nykthos decks can potentially run it. You might find, you know, random decks trying to cheat this into play somehow. Like, it just seems like it does enough things and it fits in enough places that, you know, it will probably be in the $20 or $30 range the entire time it's in standard just because it is that type of card.
Now, this card being spoiled so early made us all interested to see how this was going to be enabled. They really don't have a way to enable this, so I think Nykthos may be the best way to cast this.
Yeah, I keep hearing Nykthos and Devotion. Do you think that Nykthos is poised to see some movement forward?
Well, with every single set we see that has monocolored cards en masse, which this one does, like this only has 10 gold cards and then the rest are all monocolor. So with every single set we see that has more monocolored cards, we're going to see Devotion pick up in stock because we're going to pick up random 2-drops and 3-drops that meet the mana requirements, like the Phoenix, whatever the hell the name of the Phoenix was, like, I don't remember.
Flame Wreath?
No, yes, that's
the Whatever. The Phoenix.
Yeah, and then the red 3-1, like those are both cards that, you know, might be a little innocuous, but the fact that they enable Devotion and they enable the most powerful land in standard, bar none, like Nykthos is incredibly powerful, and as soon as there's enough incentives for it to see play again, like I would be completely shocked if it didn't. Like the mana ramp outside of Nykthos is already very, very good in the format. There's a new Sylvan Caryatid type of card in this format that taps for 2 green if you have Ferocious, he might be playable. So there's a lot of stuff going on that could make those decks, you know, popular again.
Nykthos is at an all-time low right now.
Yeah.
Honestly, it feels pretty good to me. This card does see some fringe modern play.
I actually really expected to see Nykthos in the mono-colored EDH pre-cons, which is why I was staying away from it. And, like, it fell based on that, but never really recovered. So I don't think it's due an upward price correction necessarily, but I think any sort of bump can, like, we've seen the ceiling is like $10 on this card, so I don't think it'll hit that again, but I'm kind of selfishly hoping this doesn't do anything just so I can get them for cheap at rotation.
Yeah.
So my pick of the week is going to be Nykthos, and you guys can all.
So about Ugin, going back to Ugin, like Colin said, I would not be surprised if it floats around that $20, $25 mark. I think Karn actually bottomed out around 10 or 12 or something, and I liked that as a good pickup then because it's just like, as a colorless planeswalker, it just hits so many levels in so many formats that whenever Ugin does bottom out, whether that is before rotation or at rotation, that's when I want in. You know, like when I think that's hit a bottom, the price is flatlined for a while, that's when I want in on it because I really, really like it long term.
So next card, Warden of the Fist Tree.
Oh, the man. Fist tree.
I was looking at the first tree and I still missed.
Get that. Fisted.
Hey, that's.
We talked about this bad figure of Destiny last week.
I want to hear what Connolly thinks.
I think it's playable. Not overly, you know, excited by it. I think that you'll just due to a lack of good aggressive 1-drops and 2-drops in a lot of different decks right now that could level this up. Green white being one of them. I don't know if green-black really would necessarily run this, but I could see green-black running this along the curve of the Death Dealer, whatnot, on up the line, like an aggro Abzan. I mean, all those modes are pretty strong. Like, being able to attack with a 3-3 on turn 2 is really all you need, and then from there it's kind of gravy. This is not as strong as Figure Destiny, don't let me, like, confuse you there. And it will not see anywhere near the amount of play that Figure Destiny did, but it still seems like a completely acceptable and probably annoying card for some decks to have to deal with, but like I said, it's not going to be like the flagship, let's do everything in our path to keep a figure of destiny alive and or back from the graveyard. It's not that type of card, but still very, very good.
I think you do like it more than all of us did. Well, I don't like it at $10, no matter what.
Well, $10 seems high, but it is mythic, so I don't know, like, exactly what happens with those types of things. But this is not going to see modern play, in my opinion. It's just too slow and too susceptible to things. Mm-hmm. But basically, you're looking at just, like, an aggressive one-drop that goes in Abzan aggro, an aggressive one-drop that maybe goes in green-white aggressive decks and combos with Fleece Mane Lion enough to be good there. I mean, it is a reasonable enough card that it's going to see play in multiple decks. It's kind of like experiment one, sort of. It's just mostly a matter of where will it land due to mythic status. Because if this was an uncommon, it would be a dollar uncommon, and I'd be totally fine seeing it places. It's all because it's got that mythic stamp on it.
So next card is a mythic. Is Whisperwood Elemental. This card is 3-2 green for a 4/4. At the beginning of your end step, manifest the top card of your library. And it's got some other cool text on the bottom of that. $6.
You gotta say what that
some is. Other cool text.
Yeah, the other text is relevant. So you sacrifice this guy, and then all face down, no wait, face up non-token creatures you control gain when they die manifest. So it's got like, I don't know, it's kind of got a bunch of Lost Down Hierarch text where you don't think you're going to use it, but then it comes up surprisingly often. But
it's got a built-in fresh meat. I like it.
Like this guy's way cooler than the dude that manifests and then fights things.
I call this my favorite card in the set, and people have just been giving me shit ever since.
I think this card's super powerful. Like, not only do you play it onto an empty board, and it starts generating an army, you play it onto a loaded board, and it gives you Wrath Protection. I mean, doesn't seem like there's any board state in which it's really bad.
Yeah, I don't know. This card seems pretty solid to me in general. It might even be like a potential Birthing Pod card. Like, it gives you a lot of value on every aspect of Birthing Pod, whether you're sacrificing face-up creatures and getting manifest dudes, or, you know, just getting a 5-mana 6/6 effectively.
I think the latent trigger is very good. I think the only thing I've heard that from detractors that I think is a good point is it doesn't really slot into any existing deck, just because what do you take out? And I don't feel qualified to speak to that. So maybe it's a build around to an extent. So it may be a good deck without a home, but I just think it's so good. It just reminds me of like Master of the Wild Hunt and Huntmaster of the Fells to an extent. And like, I'm just the advantage you're going to get so often latently, but without doing anything, plus having the deterrent built in, I think is very strong. But I mean, Connolly, what do you think about where it slots in, and is that going to be a fatal liability?
It doesn't necessarily fit into any existing archetypes that well. Maybe into Sidisi decks, just for a little bit more whip synergy, just because it's kind of got that Grave Titan-esque feel to it. But in general, no, it's not going to see a ton of play in existing decks, but at the same time, there are potentially a lot of decks out there that want to use this. Maybe Mono Green Devotion wants a piece of this, but I doubt it. It is some card advantage, though. Like, if you can afford to flip those creatures up, then you're getting a pretty big bonus.
And if you do build around it and you jam four copies of Hooded Hydra and you're flipping up a 5/5 for 2 mana.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. I can't tell the difference between cute and good sometimes. And sometimes there is no difference.
I think that this card is very good. And maybe it doesn't, you know, find its home until after rotation. And, you know, I know it's early, start talking about after rotation, whatever, but I mean, it's a mythic, and it's good on an empty board, and it's good on a full board. And so the power level is just there. Like, this is the kind of card that I believe will eventually find a home before it's Simon Standard, simply because the power level is so high.
So it's out of stock at $6.
Ooh, it's $6 on TCG Player right now.
All right, so are you picking them up or not?
I will be ballsy and say I like this at $6.
I do too.
Yeah, I think you're there. I think it's not going to see the play right away, but it has the potential to because the power of it is that high.
And this is moving the needle on other cards, and I think anytime that happens, it's worth looking into. Because people are at least brewing with it. If Hooded Hydra and Trail of Mystery and, you know, all kind of stuff like that is seeing movement.
So next card is Wild Call. Should be a bold card. And then we get to our last card and the final card for the set review. Yasova Dragonclaw is at $1 for
This is so much fun.
One quick note before we move on to Dragonclaw. Since we just talked extensively about Whisperwood Elemental, I would say that Wild Call's price, I mean, it won't be much higher than bulk, but I would say its fate is almost directly tied with the Whisperwood Elemental, because they're going to be playing the same deck. You can randomly Wild Call your Hooded Hydro and give it multiple +1/+1 counters or whatever. Like, they very much fit into the same application. And you're not really spending anything, because you're paying 2 mana for a 2/2 by just green-green, and then your X is just completely bonused on top of that, so... Like, it's a card that scales throughout the game and potentially works well in a deck with, you know, enough creatures to flip over. So I wouldn't completely discount it, but it's probably not worth, you know, investing a lot of money in.
I'm glad you piped up, because I thought maybe you'd have something to say about Wild Call, and then when you didn't, I was like, oh, well, okay. It just, my question was, do you want to spend a card for this effect?
You're effectively drawing a card. Like, it's kind of like Green Sun Zenith in a way. Like, let's say you hit a land or whatever. That's not a big deal. I milled a land, which is huge. I effectively, you know, gained myself a draw step and got, like, a, you know, a 6/6 for 6. Not the greatest effect, but that's whatever. But the second I hit a Pelucranos or something for 3 mana or 4 mana, and then I have this 3/3 creature sitting around, flips over as a 6/6 Pelucranos whenever I want, like... I don't know, it seems like that has enough potential to kind of get you into a game in a grindy mid-range type of setup. And if your deck's specifically looking to set up Manifest already via things like Whisperwood Elemental, then this just feels like another reward for doing so.
Yeah, and it scales very well. I mean, there may be scenarios where you just do it for 2 mana to get a blocker, you know?
And this goes in 100% of limited decks that can cough up green mana probably, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. All right, so what about Yasova, the Dragonclaw, at $1? I mean, Arcane's powerful.
This whole cycle of 3-drop, like, potential EDH generals that are monocolored and playable in 3-color decks, you know, they're tiny leaders. Stealing their stuff is awesome. My favorite thing to do in EDH is steal their creatures and beat them with them. I love threatening. I love playing bribery. I love playing, Vedalken Shackles. This is a cool ability. I don't know if it's going to move the non-foil price, but I think we have a potential to see what Tiny Leaders is going to do. If the effect of Tiny Leaders plus EDH is going to be appreciably greater than just EDH, or if it's just like another thing that doesn't really move the needle. So
my guess is no, because the people.
My guess is no too. Yeah.
People who play Tiny Leaders are people who already played Commander. It's not necessarily anybody new.
I don't know. The people that are excited about Tiny Leaders seem to be people that don't like EDH.
I think it's people who probably got burned out on EDH.
Yeah, that's a good point. They just want to be playing Legacy, and you can play a 50-card Legacy deck, Singleton. Hey, Marcel Singleton, you like that.
I think Yasova's probably a buck. I mean, it's not...
Yeah. It's just, like, I like that whole cycle, but... It could be a long time before the price moves, if at all. All
right. Well, that's a wrap. We are at the end of this lovely podcast. We'd like to thank you kindly for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you on to discuss all these beautiful cards.
For sure.
So
being here.
Where can people reach you at?
Best place is on Twitter, at Conley81. Also, you can get me on Facebook, but that is not the most reliable place, but you can try. I have articles on tcgplayer.com and channelfireball.com and video content on Channel Fireball as well. And then whenever we get our podcast back around, you can catch me on MTG Popery with Tom and Adam sometime in the near future, hopefully.
Hopefully. Looking forward to that one. All right, and you other guys, you got anything to say, or we're just out of here?
Conley, thank you very much for giving Jason shit today.
Yes.
I didn't do it intentionally, but I'm glad that I
No, waited. You know what? It's fine, because I was just relieved that what I thought was happening wasn't happening, so I'm glad you gave me shit. That was fun.
All good.
He's saying give him some more, is what he's saying right now.
I'm not a big shit giver. I lied.
Buckets of shit, $20 right now.
Marcel just spent a weekend with me. He knows I'm big into the shit giving.
Hey, after Fogos, I had to take a huge shit.
Yeah, that's...
thanks, Marcel.
So looking forward to more Fogos shits later when after Vegas, because I'm going to have to pay for this high sentinel of Ashran.
This sets high
sentinel. A ration, yes.
Ashram.
Ashram, that's what's going to happen. Alright, well, we're out of here. Brainstorm Brewery. Episode 131? Yeah.
Maybe we won't wait 100 episodes this time to get Conley back on. Yes.
If I allow it.
Well, our guys will talk to your guys. We'll figure something out.
I don't have any guys. Who are those guys? What are you talking about?
Our people will talk to your people.
Okay, yeah, I got people. I don't have any guys, but I got people.
Okay, there we go. We're at least on the same page somewhere.
This is real awkward, and I'm really enjoying it.
I can't tell if we're still on the cast or not.
You never can.
It's going to fade out. You never ever can.
I honestly have no idea if he's still recording. I'm like waiting for the fade point and it'll,
at some point it'll maybe stop. We don't really
know. It stopped a while ago, yeah.
We never know.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.